Chapter 11. He was old now, 78 long, hard years old. His hair and his eyebrows were creamy white. His skin was folded and creased, freckled and spotted, hanging in unexpected little pouches under his chin and eyes. His body had dried out, so he stood gaunt and stooped, like a tree that has taken a set before the prevailing winds. But there was still the underlying urgency in the way he held himself. The same urgency that had earned him the name of Hurry Hirschfeld when he first bustled into the goldfield 60 years ago. On this Monday morning, he was standing before the full-length windows of his penthouse office, looking down on the city of Johannesburg. Reef House stood shoulder to massive shoulder with the Schlesinger building on the Braamfontein ridge above the city proper. From this height, it seemed that Johannesburg cowered at Hurry Hirschfeld's feet, as well it should. Long ago, even before the Great Depression of the 30s, he had ceased to measure his wealth in terms of money. He owned outright a little over a quarter of the issued share capital of Central Rand Consolidated. At the present market price of 120 rands per share, this was a staggering sum. In addition, through a complicated arrangement of trusts, proxy rights, and interlocking directorates, he had control of a further massive block of 20% of the company's voting rights. The overhead intercom pinged softly into this room of soft fabrics and muted colours, and Hurry started slightly. "Yes," he said, without turning away from the window. "Dr. Steiner is here, Mr. Hirschfeld?" His secretary's voice whispered, ghostly and disembodied, into the luscious room. "Send him in," snapped Hurry. That goddamned intercom always gave him the creeps. The whole goddamned room gave him the creeps. It was, as Hurry had said often and loudly, like a fairy brothel. For 55 years, he had worked in a bleak, uncarpeted office with a few yellowing photographs of men and machinery on its walls. Then they had moved him in here. He glanced around the room with the distaste that 5 years had not lulled. What did they think he was? A bloody lady's hairdresser? The panelling door slid noiselessly aside, and Dr. Manfred Steiner stepped neatly into the room. "Good morning, Grandfather," he said. For 10 years, ever since Terry had been bird-brained enough to marry him, Manfred Steiner had called Hurry Hirschfeld that, and Hurry hated it. He remembered now that Manfred Steiner was also responsible for the design and decor of Reef House, and therefore the author of his recent irritation. "Whatever it is you want, know," he said, and he moved across to the air conditioning controls. The thermostat was already set at high. Now Hurry turned it to highest. Within minutes, the room would be at the correct temperature for growing orchids. "How are you this morning, Grandfather?" Manfred seemed not to have heard. His expression was bland and neutral as he moved to the desk and laid out his papers. "Bloody awful," said Hurry. It was impossible to disconcert the little prig, he thought. You might as well shout insults at an efficiently functioning piece of machinery. "I am sorry to hear that." Manfred took out his handkerchief and touched his chin and forehead. "I have the weekly reports." Hurry capitulated and went across to the desk. This was business. He sat down and read quickly. His questions were abrupt, cutting, and instantly answered. But Manfred's handkerchief was busy now, swabbing and dabbing. Twice he removed his spectacles and wiped steam from the lens. "Can I turn the air conditioning down a little, Grandfather?" he asked. "You touch it and I'll kick your ass," said Harry without looking up. Another 5 minutes, and Manfred Steiner stood up suddenly. "Excuse me, Grandfather." And he shot across the office and disappeared into the adjoining bathroom suite. Harry cocked his head to listen, and when he heard the taps hiss, he grinned happily. The air conditioning was the only method he had discovered of disconcerting Manfred Steiner, and for 10 years he had been experimenting with various techniques. "Don't use all the soap," he shouted gleefully. "You are the one always on about office expenses." It did not seem ludicrous to Harry that one of the richest and most influential men in Africa should devote so much time and energy to baiting his personal assistant. At 11 o'clock, Manfred Steiner gathered his papers and began packing them carefully in his monogrammed pigskin briefcase. "About the appointment of a new general manager for the Sonderditch to replace Mr. Lemmer. You will recall my memo regarding the appointment of younger men to key positions." "Never read the bloody thing," lied Harry Hirschfeld. They both knew he read everything and remembered it. "Well," Manfred went on to enlarge his thesis for a minute, and then ended, "in view of this, my department, myself concurring entirely, urges the appointment of Rodney Barry Ironsides, the present underground manager, to the position. I hope that you would initial the recommendation, and we can put it through at Friday's meeting." Dexterously, Manfred slid the yellow memo in front of Harry Hirschfeld, unscrewed the cap of his pen, and offered it to him. Harry picked the memo up between thumb and forefinger, as though it were someone's dirty handkerchief, and dropped it into the waste paper bin. "Do you wish me to tell you in detail what you and your planning department can do?" he asked. "Grandfather," Manfred admonished him mildly, "you cannot run the company as though you were a robber baron. You cannot ignore the team of highly trained men who are your advisers." "I have run it that way for 50 years. You show me who's going to change that." Harry leaned back in his chair with vast satisfaction and fished a powerful-looking cigar out of his inner pocket. "Grandfather, that cigar, the doctor said..." "And I said, Fred Plummer gets the job as manager of the Sonderditch." "He goes on pension next year," protested Manfred Steiner. "Yes," Harry nodded, "but how does that alter the position?" "He's an old dodderer." Manfred tried again. There was a desperate edge to his voice. He had not anticipated one of the old man's whims cutting across his plans. "He is 12 years younger than I am," growled Harry ominously. "How does that make him an old dodderer?"